Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, February 8th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox, which can turn your iPad into a television. With the new iPad app from Slingbox, you can watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you go. Check it out at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us from across the Atlantic Ocean are Will Harris and Nate Langson, helping us to make sense of the tech news today. Nate Langson, editor-in-chief of Wired.co.uk, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be welcomed.
And to make you feel at home from up the motorway, we have Will Harris of ChannelFlip.com.
It is an honor and a privilege, as always.
To be on with Nate, I assume you mean.
Yeah,
this is the first time we've landed on a show together, actually. And it's not even up the motorway. You're just up the road from me, I think.
Is that right? You're that close?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you sitting like in the same pub?
No, but you know what? For next time, we absolutely should do. That is the only thing that can make...
Yeah.
Both did it.
Because I was going to say, it's a pretty piss-poor looking pub, if it is.
No. Hey, it's my flat. I've got pictures of cats. I've got the Hubble Space photo up there. Better than any pub.
Yeah, it looks like
some
kind of bar.
And I have very nice drapes.
Your drapes are lovely. I did mean to compliment you on that. All right, let's move into the tech news. Starting with Sony going full press on George Hotz. We've mentioned before that Sony is suing George Hotz over publishing code that would allow you, with a little help of your own, to jailbreak your PS3. Sony versus George Hotz. Now is going after not just George Hotz, but the entire Fail Overflow team, which helped create the PS3 jailbreak. They filed a broad motion for discovery. Motion for discovery, I'm probably going to mess this up, lawyers in the audience, but generally speaking means we need to find out facts about the person that, you know, or the things that are happening for our case. So they have, as part of their motion for discovery, asked YouTube to hand over information on George Hotz's account, where his jailbreak video was posted, which is interesting because the jailbreak video just shows it in action. It actually doesn't necessarily show you how to do it. How many users accessed the video, the number of people who saw it, usernames of anyone who accessed the video. The video was in a private account, so they actually log every user who looked at the video. Sony wants that. They want to know who those people were, and they want usernames and IP addresses of anyone who posted or published comments on the video. So even if you just went to the page, didn't even watch it, and said, this sounds like a bad idea, your username and your IP address could be in Sony's hands soon.
Yeah, I'm filing this under good luck with that. This whole thing reminds me of the Viacom case where YouTube was asked to basically present all these IP addresses and usernames of data who'd been accessing this illicitly uploaded content to YouTube. And what they got is data, but it was completely anonymized. That's about as good as they're going to get from this, in my limited legal understanding.
But we're not even finished. That's the ridiculous part. They're also asking Twitter to hand over personal info of every member of the Fail Overflow team. Now we're finished. So, Will, do you agree with Nate? Like, they're not going to get this stuff, right?
Well, it's a really interesting question because, legally, Twitter and YouTube are allowed to hand over all this info because they have, you know, when you sign up to use those services under the terms of service, you explicitly allow them to do these kind of things for law enforcement purposes. The question is whether, you know, a judge will require, for example, YouTube to anonymize the data. I think in previous cases, you know, Nate referred to Viacom, that's been a no-go and YouTube has handed over anonymized data. But I think it highlights, you know, a bit of a wider problem, which is that whenever you sign up to use one of these services, you are consenting that in the event of, you know, any kind of legal, you know, motion for discovery or any other such motion, all your data is going to be handed over without anybody from you know, Sony or the plaintiff side ever having to contact you, which is, you know, a bit of a privacy issue.
And we should point out that motion for discovery just means they're saying we need this information to build a case against George Hotz and the other people they've named. They've named some members of the Failover Flow team. So when they're going after all this information, they're saying we need this to build our case. And we need to cast a wide net so we can make sure we find everything that could bear on our case. They're not actually going to go after you for watching the video. There's nothing illegal about that. But what they are going to do is try to figure out if any of the Fail Overflow people were watching that video.
Well, so unless they decide that by posting some kind of comment on the video, you were assisting with the workaround if you posted any kind of helpful comment, and that thus makes you liable under the DMCA.
And they have. That's right. They have threatened anybody who posted anything to do with the code with a lawsuit. So they might expand the lawsuit if they found that in your post. But just
so the question is, I guess, whether the court will end up saying, you know, that in the same way it's legal to jailbreak your phone because you've bought it and that should be an exception under the DMCA, will the court rule that, you know, the PS3 has the same exception? I think that'd be a really interesting question.
Right, because the exception given to phones was given by the Library of Congress, which they are charged with coming up with exceptions to the DMCA in the public interest. They did not give an exception for consoles. So it would be precedent-setting for a court to say, well, let's interpret that to mean wider devices. If the Library of Congress says phones should be like that, your game console should be like that as well. Right, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big difference is that with a phone, I think you're only actually unlocking the potential of the hardware. You're not actually making any modifications. On the PS3 side, this is different to the Xbox. You're not involving any kind of hardware chipping of the console. Is that right?
As far as I know, no. This is a hardware-free mod. I think there might be hardware necessary to load the firmware, but it's not a chip needs to. It's not like the Xbox where you have to have a chip sitting in it.
Yeah, I think that the way that this will probably end up going is that when Xbox had this, they basically banned people from Xbox Live who modified their consoles, and we were talking about this earlier on in the sort of pre-show chat, that that's probably the way that they're going to go, and they're probably within their rights, I guess, to do that, to ban people from the PlayStation Network. But
that's not
really
what they want to do, right? If that's what they wanted to do, they could do that. They want to stop people using their PS3 to load things like Linux, and I really struggle to understand why.
In fact, the government agency in Norway agrees with you. They've reported Sony to the consumer ombudsman of that country because of a flood of complaints over the removal of the other OS functionality. And removal of that functionality is what led people like George Hotz to seek a way to jailbreak the PS3. Because, yes, there are a lot of them out there who want to play pirated games. Let's be honest. That's true. But that is not the only use that this software can be put to. And there was not, I mean, were people using the other OS to get around and play some pirated games? Yeah, there was a little bit of that going on, but there's a lot more of it going on. And Sony is encouraging people to fight them on this now. I expect to see the code written, you know, printed on T-shirts any moment now, because that's what we do when you go after this.
Post it all over the front page.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because go ahead, Will.
I was going to say, it's just interesting because, you know, you can see why Norway is doing this. Sony sold the console as doing one thing to consumers and then removed that functionality post hoc. And that's, you know, a pretty shady thing to be doing in anybody's books.
Now, something that's just a side note and a coincidence has nothing to do with the George Hotz case, but LG has claimed in a complaint with the International Trade Commission that the Sony PS3 violates two patents in connection with how video game consoles render Blu-ray data and are asking that PS3s not be allowed to be sold in the United States. That is not as drastic as it sounds, because that's pretty much what everyone does when they file this kind of claim with the International Trade Commission, and it almost never is carried out. It's usually settled before something like that has to happen, but I guess it's because Sony demanded in December that the commission bar LG from distributing cell phones in the United States because of some patents. So this is a patent war that Sony's going to have to fight on the other end. They have enough lawyers, though. They'll be fine.
You could say patent war. You could say tit for tat.
Yes.
You take my conkers and I'll take your ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll both go home and cry.
That's the way the patent system works these days, right? You have to build up a bunch of patents so that when someone comes after you, you can try to find one that you own to sue them about and then get them to settle so that you don't actually have to go to court. All the patent system does now is encourage that kind of behavior, right?
Well, really, you've got these gentlemen's agreements where you own a pool of patents and another company owns a pool of patents, and you kind of sort of agree not to sue each other because you're using each other's patents. And it's only when someone kind of goes against that sort of gentleman's agreement that a lot of these things start kicking up and you get people suing each other left, right, and center. But this one's even more interesting because it's Sony, and, you know, Sony invented Blu-ray. That amuses me.
I am always pleased to see iFixit start to rip something apart because they always find out something interesting. They have already got a hold of a Verizon iPhone because, as we mentioned yesterday, a lot of people have received them. I guess FedEx, from what I hear, FedEx messed up and started shipping things early that they weren't supposed to ship. That's why a bunch of people are getting the Verizon iPhones already. iFixit has already torn one apart and found a Qualcomm MDM6600 chip inside. That is a world chip, same chip that's in the Motorola Droid, and is capable of GSM and HSPA Plus along with CDMA and EVDO, meaning that if they wanted to, they could have engineered the Verizon iPhone to be a world phone. They just would have,
they would have to add micro SIM slots because the Verizon iPhone doesn't have a SIM card, whereas a GSM phone requires a SIM card. And I think this is what's actually quite interesting, because all the excitement over the Verizon iPhone means that anyone who buys one of those models won't be able to come over and use it in pretty much all of Europe, because we don't have CDMA. We have GSM across the board. It wouldn't work at all in the UK. But I think that the iPhone using one chip doesn't necessarily mean that they could just shove that chip into any phone and it would work. You would need, you know, the SIM card slot, for example, in order to be an actual world phone.
Although this could be why Apple had, there was the rumors that Apple had that software SIM system that they were working on so that you wouldn't have to actually change cards. You could just add a SIM card through the software.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting move if that happened. But I just cannot see that any of the networks getting on board, because they would need all the networks to be on board for that. I mean, we have the iPhone on every network in the UK. And in order to roll that out, you would basically have to say, we want this for all networks, because one network isn't going to sign up for it while everyone else or their competitors are still using SIM cards, because it restricts the consumer on where they can take their contract. You can't just take your SIM and shove it in a new phone, because you're basically tying the SIM itself to Apple's hardware. So there will be serious problems there, I think.
But if anybody can do it, if anybody has the leverage over operators to make them accept that, it's got to be Apple.
Yeah, but I mean, they did it with the micro SIM, but I think it was a lot easier to argue that, because with the micro SIM, you can always say, well, you can put in an adapter. You know, it's giving an incentive for networks to offer these kind of better, smaller SIM cards, because, I mean, SIM cards now, the normal size ones, are significantly smaller than they used to be. You know, they used to be these giant credit card size things. Mm. You know, it's kind of an evolution, but I think going to a purely software-based thing is an entirely different argument. I'm just not sure that the networks would be on board.
Do you think that this is an indication that they will be using this Qualcomm chip in future iPads and iPhones and make them dual-compatible so that they could work in CDMA countries besides the United States, like Japan and other areas that have CDMA as well as GSM?
Well, I think at least from a... Sorry, go on, Nate.
I was saying, I think it lays the foundation for that, definitely, because it's sort of a first step. But, you know, as we were saying earlier, it needs to be both. It needs to be both. The SIM card slot and the chip.
Right. Now, I think we'll probably see that. I think because you'll need a SIM card slot for your AT&T phone, and I would assume it would be more efficient to just manufacture one body, and a CDMA iPhone would come with this Qualcomm chip and a SIM card slot that just wouldn't be used unless you were overseas.
Yeah, I think purely the economies of scale dictate that you're not making, you know, for long, two different types of phones. You make one phone because then, you know, you get much more economies of scale.
The Kindle will finally get page numbers Woohoo! Everybody's really excited about this. But here's the scoop. Kindle got a software update. Includes something that when you reach the end of the book, you can now tweet about it. It's called Before You Go. They also added the ability to publicly share notes and highlights with others, which might be good for classroom. But the big one is page numbers are now there. They've added them to the top 100 bestsellers, as well as what they say is tens of thousands of other books, and they'll be added to more and more books as they come out. Whatever word is displayed in the top left corner of your screen will be how they determine the page number. And when you press the menu button, you'll be able to see what page you're on.
Hmm. And I guess this is all relative to your device, because you can change things like font size, so there'd have to be some kind of place marker, right? And they're using like a top left word.
That's what the top left word is the place marker, and that's how they'll determine whatever page that top left word was on in the print edition. I presume that's the hardback edition. That will be what page it displays, but it won't display the page all the time. It's just you can get that page. It's sort of like a bit of metadata, I guess.
I have to say, it seems like, you know, like this whole kind of desktop metaphor for your computer, it seems that pages for ebooks are really an outdated metaphor, given that we have so much, you know, instant accessibility to anywhere within the book based on, you know, real text searching or, you know, real time shared annotations from colleagues or people, you know, anywhere else in the world that have added stuff to Kindles. Like the page number reference just seems kind of pointless.
Well, I guess you need it for citations. The citation systems are not set up for those crazy Kindle numbers. So I think a lot of students have complained about that, because it's just a whole lot easier to cite something from a textbook if you've got an actual page number. But yeah, you're right. I mean, eventually, you know, one would assume there won't be a lot of books that actually have pages. There may be books printed, a lot of books printed direct to digital. Then what do you do?
Well, that's a very good question, because I don't think there is an answer to that right now.
But I think whatever the answer is, it needs to be some sort of a standard, particularly with the number of ebook readers coming on the market and different stores. I think we need... It's so weird talking about creating a standard for page numbers on ebooks, but you know, I think it's something that if we're talking about getting into the world of citations, which are very, very important, obviously in academia and things like that, there's probably got to be some sort of standard metadata in order to make sure that this is a consistent page number experience across. Sorry, I'm so amused by this. This is something I never thought I'd be talking about, but. Awesome.
You know what? I'm behind you, Nate. Let's lead this charge. I'm sure we can get the world on our side. Or at least two or three people in the audience. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. With Slingbox, you can now watch your home TV on your iPad anywhere you go. Slingbox is different. Some companies say their systems let you watch TV everywhere, but only Slingbox lets you watch your home TV anywhere you go, no matter who you get your service from. You're not limited to certain channels. You don't have to pay extra for special services. Anything you can watch on your television, you can watch on your iPad. No other system lets you do this. You can even control and watch your DVR. It controls your television remotely. It's actually good even when you're at home. You can use it like a remote. In addition to the iPad, Slingbox works with any smartphone, iPod Touch, or laptop. You'd like to get started with Slingbox and get your TV your way for free, even your DVR recordings. Just connect your Slingbox to the internet, to your home TV, and then anywhere you go that has an internet connection, you can watch your home TV. It's that easy. Slingbox is available at Best Buy and Amazon, and you can learn more at slingbox.com. Thank them for their support of Tech News Today. ComScore has some new numbers out for the United States. It's very good news for Android. Not bad news for iOS, but it's horrible news for everybody else. The biggest news is that usage of smartphones in the United States has jumped 60% over last year. 63.2 million people in the U.S. owned smartphones during the last 3 months of December 2010. And of those people who did own smartphones, most of them were owning a BlackBerry. RIM made up 31.6%, but they've almost been caught. That number was down 5.7% from September. Google rose 7.3% to 28.7%. Apple still has a quarter of the market, rising slightly. Microsoft down 1.5% and Palm down 0.5%, but Palm only had 3.7%. So that 0.5% was a big chunk of their percent of the market share. And what this means is Android and iOS are really starting to eat away at the marketplace.
And I think the story here is the meteoric rise of Android, right?
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
it's huge.
Android has come from nowhere, really, 18 months ago, to suddenly beat this massive percentage of smartphone sales based on just kind of blanket availability across phones. I mean, it's getting to the stage where it's now kind of hard to buy a smartphone that is Android.
Yeah, almost every carrier. What, Nokia is probably the only major selling carrier that doesn't have an Android phone. We'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But if you're not buying an iPhone, you're probably looking at an Android phone right now, if not a BlackBerry. But more people are looking at Android than BlackBerry, and that's bore out by these numbers. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the other question that we were sort of talking about around this is what do we count as a smartphone at this point? Is it, the ability to run apps? Is it a touch screen? Is it some other kind of nebulous idea of what makes it smart? Because there are a lot of phones out there now that you can install apps on.
Yeah,
aren't Android.
We looked this up in the pre-show because, IDC also has a story out that global smartphone sales have passed PC sales in the fourth quarter of 2010. 100.9 million smartphones sold over 92.1 million PCs. So what is a smartphone? The way PC Mag defines it in their glossary is any phone that you can install and run apps on, not just that it comes with apps, but I've got an actual operating system that developers can write for, rather than, say, a feature phone which has some apps, but probably runs those apps on Java ME.
Yeah, and I think the divide between what a smartphone is, the divide between a smartphone and a feature phone was much more clear cut several years ago. I mean, sort of, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Even going back to sort of the days of the Nokia Communicator was it was sort of your smartphone type business phone, QWERTY keyboard type device, and then there was everything else. Whereas now you've got basic smartphones, you've got middle of the road smartphones, you've got high end smartphones, and even some of the I gave my mum a Nokia the other day it's got a touchscreen, it's got apps, the Obi Store. That's technically, you could argue, that's a smartphone. Whereas to me, it's more of just a feature phone. It's a candy bar phone. So it's although this huge rise of smartphone usage is incredibly impressive and important for the industry as a whole, I think it raises a larger question of, as we're saying, what is a smartphone now? Are all phones smartphones?
I think it's kind of, in a way, come completely roundabout, because the original smartphones, in quotes, were BlackBerries, right? Because they were so smart, because they could do your email as well. Well, now we're looking at this and saying, well, actually, BlackBerries kind of look more like feature phones, because really all they do is check your email.
Yeah, I think eventually all of our phones will be smartphones, because you see these feature-like cheap Android phones now, and they usually have an older version of Android. It doesn't take advantage of all of the features of the operating system, but they can then be sold as a smartphone, which a lot of people say, well, hey, if I can get a smartphone for $50, even though it's not that great, at least I can say, hey, I've got a smartphone, runs Android, just like the big boys. They usually talk
That's
like
exactly
that, too.
What they're saying, Tom. That's what they're saying when they're in the store.
Yeah.
Just like the big boys, give me a smartphone.
All right. One last thing to mention from the ComScore study is that obviously teens don't use email. Web email usage declined 59% among teens. Not a big surprise to me, but it actually increased for people 55 and up. So they won't be able to
get
in touch with them. Also not a big surprise to me.
They won't get in touch with anyone 12 to 17, but hey.
Does that include emails that Facebook sends automatically? You have a new Facebook message, I wonder.
It says they don't read it, so they may be getting those emails, they never open them because they never go to their account. Interesting story over on the blog MocoNews.net. They cover the mobile space, saying that they've been talking to some operators, carriers, about Nokia. Nokia has that big announcement coming up on Friday, and nobody knows exactly what it is. A lot of speculation. They're saying, we hope to high heaven that they do not announce they're going to go with Android. And it's because of these ComScore numbers we're talking about. Because if they go with Android, then everyone's on Android, and essentially it limits the competition in the marketplace.
I don't think Nokia is going to go all Android. I think Nokia has such a huge spread of devices. It has everything from the N8, the sort of top-end smartphone, if you like, all the way down to your very basic kind of 1000 series phones. And I think what's more likely to happen is that they will have sort of a portion of their phones that will run Android, so they can appeal to those people, probably somewhere in the mid-range up to the lower end of the high end. And then they will still keep their Symbian, and then Symbian 4 as being kind of their flagship OS that they're really pushing on their top-end devices. I think that the likes of the N8, they're always going to be running, at least for the foreseeable future, Nokia's own platform. They've invested a hell of a lot in that, not half by just buying Symbian outright. But I think it's likely that because of the huge number of devices they've got, they can manage both quite easily.
I think, though, if Nokia was smart, to me, they would use everything. Like, their main point of differentiation could be, we're the guys that make all the different types of smartphones. We make Android phones, we make MeeGo phones, we make WP7 phones, we make OV phones. They could be the guys that make everything, because then you're spreading your risk. I think if they jump, too far into bed with one platform or another, they risk becoming just an also-ran in that platform space.
Now, someone in the chat room just sent along this link about an Dalvik Turbo. Have you guys heard of this? OHA member Myria just announced Alien Dalvik, with the promise of running the majority of unmodified Android apps on non-Android platforms, including MeeGo. They'll be showing it off at Mobile World Congress.
That. It's like an Android emulator kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's sort of running in an interpreter per app, or kind of on an OS level?
So the
sort of like, but for mobiles.
I guess it does some real-time transcoding or emulation. I'm not sure. I just saw the link just now, so I'm not sure how it works. But if that were the case, all these operators who want Nokia to run MeeGo, they're like, please don't give up MeeGo. You can ditch Symbian. We don't care. I think Symbian's dead. But they're like, we need another smartphone operating system in the mix. Please don't give up on MeeGo. They would allow them to go Windows Phone 7. Does it like you can do it. Big Windows Phone 7 is small enough right now. We don't mind if you give them a little bump, but don't give up on MeeGo.
Windows Phone 7, though, has some pretty meaty minimum requirements though for their phones. And I don't think that Nokia is going to say, well, we're going to ditch Symbian and we're not going to bother pursuing Symbian 4. And instead, we're going to shove Windows Phone 7 on our next flagship phone. Because, Windows Phone 7 can't run on most of Nokia's line, in fact. They wouldn't be able to run it on some of these entry-level phones because they don't have, gigahertz processors. They don't have the minimum memory requirements. They don't have the screen resolutions. So they're going to have to stick to Symbian for, a huge majority of their phones. And so much of Nokia's money comes from the kind of, candy bar phones and the, what would traditionally not be known as a smartphone. And I think that although Android, I don't think, is necessarily specifying minimum specs in quite the same way, there are minimum specs that Android, certainly the next generation of Android, is going to be able to run on.
I think there are some really interesting parallels here with, the PC world. And we were talking earlier about, how close smartphones are starting to become to PCs, and there are crossover devices like, the Atrix. And I think, if you look at the situation with PCs today, you've got basically two operating systems. You've got Apple and you've got Windows, and Windows runs on everything, and Apple runs on a small subset of Apple hardware. And you have to say that if phone usage is going to start to follow the same trend line, smartphone usage as PCs, to the point where everybody has a smartphone in the same way that everybody has a PC, you have to kind of think that actually the operating system is going to follow the same trend line as well. And there's going to be the small subset that's Apple, and the large kind of cross-platform, everybody uses it because it's the de facto standard OS. And that at the moment looks like it's going to be Android.
I have to say, whatever Nokia decides to do on Friday, it's going to pale in comparison to the memo that has been rumored to be floating around on the internet, referred to now as the standing on a burning platform memo. It is allegedly written by Stephen Elop, the CEO of Nokia, and is now my favorite slang name for a memo since the peanut butter spread too thin memo of the Yahoo days of the middle part of the last decade. Apparently the memo is talking about how, you know, you're standing on a burning platform, everything's going down around you, you have to take some risks. And the memo ends with the metaphor of a man jumping off the platform into the unknown to avoid certain death, according to TechCrunch. So, Stephen Elop might set himself on fire Friday. Who knows? This is pretty dramatic stuff here.
Yeah, I think it's actually a very good move. If it's not true, then whoever wrote it has a pretty firm grasp on what Nokia should be saying right now. I mean, it's kind of a fair metaphor in a way. But I mean, they were kind of jumping into the abyss a little bit by buying Symbian and open sourcing it when they did. You know, it was sort of at that time when Android was about to jump up and Apple was doing the original iPhone and things, and that was actually a pretty brave move. It could have turned out to be an incredibly bad decision, but I'm not sure Nokia would agree right at this point.
All right, a couple of other stories before we hit the news fuse. Facebook announced their new corporate headquarters will be in the 1 million square foot campus in Menlo Park, formerly occupied by Sun. Apparently, they used to call it Sun Quentin because it looks like a prison. And there is a prison here in San Quentin, right near where I live. So anyway, at least they've got a lot of room for their slaves to toil in. And Google, who's always looked a little prettier, they've always, Facebook, I think Facebook's always been a little jealous that Google is kind of the fancier looking girl at the ball. Google got a Frank Gehry designed office building near the beach down in Venice, California. It's the former headquarters of the Chiat Day advertising agency and has a giant binocular shaped facade that apparently is referenced in travel guides a lot.
Wow.
We're getting new headquarters here at Twit too. Nope. They didn't mention that in the Reuters article.
Actually, but I was looking at some figures at how fast Google was growing in the same period, and Google grew in terms of its employee count sort of about three times. Its headcount tripled over less than 2 years. You know, from the end of 2003 till about September 2005, it went from 1,600 employees to almost 5,000 employees in just under 2 years. And I think Facebook, some people have commented that Facebook's growing incredibly fast and they're hiring at this huge rate. And these new headquarters allow them to grow even more quite quickly. They're still not quite growing at the rate that Google was growing at the same time. So it looks like they're making this huge decision to massively increase their headcount. But it's actually not that quick, compared to what it could be.
Both these companies are hiring like mad. And so the fact, whenever you announce big new office space, the reason Google's saying the reason they're getting this office space in LA is that they're expanding as well. It's a little bit of a me too, because Facebook's announcement has been coming for a long time. Google's announcement was a little less hyped, but they made it on the same day. It's like wearing the same dress to the party. Also, Dell's got a 10-inch Windows 7 tablet in the pipeline. They announced 39 new products at the Dell Means Business announcement this morning. But the one everybody's paying attention to is the Windows 7 Business tablet.
That doesn't really exist.
It doesn't really exist.
Well, I mean, this wasn't a working prototype.
Like most of these announcements, it didn't work at all. But it will run on an Intel processor. Big surprise there. Could be available by the middle of the year. And no other price or release details. Although they did sort of shuffle under the rug that they're going to have an Android version of this as well.
Tom, is that a 10-inch Windows 7 tablet in your pocket, or are you just really pleased to see me?
Dude, I got a Dell.
You know what? I think this is going to flop. I really do. I don't see this doing anything. I think you've got the Android stuff and that Motorola Zoom that's coming out and all the stuff that's going on with Android and the iPad 2 and things like that. I just don't see a 10-inch Windows tablet doing anything at all. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to flop quickly.
So a floppy 10-inch from Dell.
A floppy 10-inch, yeah. All right. Which is still pretty impressive.
I'm so glad you went there, Tom.
You've heard it here first. I guess, I said it's not a surprise that there's an Intel processor in here because it's Dell. and Dell has a very close relationship with Intel. But Intel has been fighting on the tablet level against Tegra 2 and ARM and lots of other people. So it is a big deal for Intel if anyone ended up buying this. All right, let's move on to the news fuse. Dawn Marie Souza, who sued her former employer for firing her after she made some nasty comments about her supervisor, showed on Facebook, has won her day, though not in court. Souza made disparaging posts on Facebook from home, but then they found them out at her workplace, and she soon found herself fired. The National Labor Relations Board sued Souza's employer on her behalf. The case has now been settled, and the company has agreed to revise its policies on workers communicating with one another.
Steve Ballmer, the erstwhile head of Microsoft, is turning against his own by reportedly expanding a push to install engineers in senior executive positions currently occupied by people who came up through the sales ranks. Bloomberg reports that Ballmer plans to extend a management shakeup aimed at adding senior product executives with an engineering background. And the moves could be made later this month. Obviously, Steve has decided that the future of Microsoft is developers,
and engineers, and folding chair throwing.
HTC is investing $40 million into cloud-based gaming on-demand provider OnLive. Moco News received a tip that this may indicate a tablet launch possibly coming as soon as next week. HTC indicated it would buy 5.33 million OnLive shares at $7.50 a piece.
Everybody's doing a tablet. Intel now has two ways for you to get Sandy Bridge chipsets back into the supply chain. The company said it has started manufacturing a new version of the flawed Cougar Point support chip and now expects to begin shipping the new parts in mid-February. In addition, though, Intel will allow some of the flawed chipsets to be used as parts in devices for sale, as long as the devices would be unaffected by the bad ports. Remember, the first two SATA ports on the Cougar Point chipset are okay. So things like laptops that only need two SATA ports would be allowed to be sold with the faulty chipset. So I don't know, maybe no MacBook Pro delay after all. We're hearing a March 11th rumor about my new MacBook Pros.
Fingers crossed for those new pros. Congratulations, Verizon iPhone fans. The Chronic dev team has rolled out Green Poison RC5_4 for both the Mac and Windows platform, which can bring untethered jailbreak action to the Verizon iPhone. Now, before you go and rush right out and download it, bear in mind this note from the dev team. If you happen to own a Verizon iPhone and are willing to give it the jailbreak treatment using Green Poison RC5_4, we wish you the best of luck for that and hope you can share your end result with us. Thanks in advance. What they didn't say on the end was, we really have no idea what's going to happen right now.
We haven't really tried this. Think it'll work.
China is building a city-sized cloud computing and office complex that will include a mega data center, one of the projects fueling that country's huge growth in IT spending. The entire complex will cover some 6.2 million square feet, with the initial data center space accounting for approximately 646,000 square feet, says IBM, which is collaborating with the Chinese with a Chinese company to build it. It's pretty big.
Cloud city. In 2010, the number of identity fraud victims decreased by 28%. You didn't expect me to say that, did you? To 8.1 million adults in the United States, 3 million fewer victims than the prior years, according to Javelin Strategy and Research. Total annual fraud decreased from $56 billion to $37 billion, the smallest amount in the 8 years of the study. Successful fraud has become more costly, though, for those it is perpetrated against, and perpetrators are more often known by the victim. So don't trust your friends. That's all I'm saying. Don't go to the ATM machine with this guy.
Bear that in mind, Tom. Thank you. Ken Olson, the legendary founder of mini computer and client server company Digital Equipment Corporation, more commonly called DEC, died on Sunday. So a moment of silence for Ken. He was 84 years old. And worked on and received patents for a switch, a line printer buffer, and magnetic core memory in the 1960s. His first product was the PDP, a 12-bit machine that used ribbons of paper tape to control and had a colourful front switching panel for setting register values. Ken, you are a legend. You'll be missed.
It will be missed. Pour a little out for Ken today. Are you a sinner? Asks and
Always.
Gadgets Tim Stevens, because there is a new,
sorry, that was rhetorical.
There is a new app for the iOS called Confession. It'll cost you $1.99, and it is actually blessed by the Roman Catholic Church. The perfect aid for every penitent allows you to keep track of all your sins by commandment that you are violating, and you can even add customized sins.
I don't know about you, Tom. But if I install this, I'm going to need a bigger memory on my iPhone.
Do you think you see a lot of people trading in for the 32 gig?
There's going to be a lot of sinning going on.
Added the confession app.
This would be great if it has Game Center and you can get achievements for sinning. Or being forgiven. You know, if you could get a push notification, you know, you have been forgiven. Great.
You've unlocked Weekend Wastrel.
Exactly. Achievement unlocked. 10 sins in 30 seconds. It'd be great fun. I'm just really annoyed about this because I came up with this idea years ago and I was going to call it Pope Idol. And the idea is that you could basically email in via a little web form a sin. You get an automated response about 10 minutes later saying you've been forgiven. And then everyone's data would be anonymized and kind of listed on a sort of, post-secret type message board sort of thing. You know, text from last night style.
I love the idea of custom sins. I want to know, like, how many sins can I think of that aren't included by default?
No one's ever done this
sin
before.
That seems like more of a challenge, right?
Yeah. Right. I could see the priest going, not a sin. Do you have that iPhone app? Like, yeah, but, I just wanted to be innovative. Not a sin. Not a sin, my son. All right, on to the calendar. BBC iPlayer app is landing on UK iPads this Thursday. It'll actually be coming to the US also in June. And Nate, you said it's also coming to Android.
Yeah, I didn't see this reported much until I didn't hear about it until the BBC sent me an email saying it's also coming to the to Android. I think probably to the Galaxy Tab Froyo.
And that's fantastic. Both the Galaxy Tab users can use it.
No, there's three now. They just sold another.
Well, I have Becky Worley's at my house. I wouldn't call. I don't think anyone's using it, but it's there.
Yeah, I had one sitting on my coffee table for about 3 weeks. It's a bit of a shame. Quite nice, but there we go. Yeah, so it's going to come to Android as well, which is pretty big news. No downloadable content in the background, though, as far as I'm aware. Although they may surprise us with that.
GoGo Wireless plans to expand into in-flight movies and possibly gaming, which means they must be prioritizing traffic because you should be able to watch in-flight movies and gaming if there's enough bandwidth, but they always like, oh, there's just not enough bandwidth for that, I guess, until you pay them for it. Study is out expecting 1 billion 802.11 AC Wi-Fi devices by 2015. 802.11 AC is the Wi-Fi protocol that allows 1 gigabit per second wireless transfers. HP's got their big webOS announcement tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific. There is apparently a lot of leaks about what's actually going to happen there. We've talked a little bit about Topaz. There's going to be a 10-inch tablet, 7-inch tablet, bunch of phones, all that stuff. So we will have the details for you on what happened tomorrow on Tech News Today. And Verizon iPhone pre-orders start tomorrow for non-Verizon customers or Verizon customers who missed the last pre-order window. That starts tomorrow. Phone goes on sale on Thursday. Time now for some voicemails, 260-TNT-SHOW. And I got a couple voicemails about PlayStation. In the post-show yesterday, we were actually talking about whether Sony might be abandoning the name PlayStation because they're not using it in the Sony Ericsson Play, and they're sort of hiding it in the NGP, the next version of the PSP, although that's not the official name. Our caller has some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I just heard you guys talking after the show about whether or not they're going to keep the PlayStation brand. I saw on the ad, actually, they said PlayStation certified. I have a feeling that they're going to have a range of devices that play PlayStation games, even if the device itself isn't a PlayStation. I don't know. By the way, this is Tim from St. Louis. Thank you.
I can see that, right? You start using PlayStation to brand the service, mm-hmm. and that way the devices don't carry the PlayStation name.
There was a great cartoon strip on Penny Arcade a couple of days ago talking about the NGP. And the two characters were sort of saying, you know, well, what are they going to call it? They called it the NGP. And the other guy says, well, they called a controller that moves, the PlayStation Move. They might as well just call it the PlayStation Thingamajig.
Yeah, I saw that too. I like those guys. They're funny. Also, our next caller talks about whether servers on PlayStation 3 can get hacked or not. He's done some research.
Hey, TNT crew, in response to the email yesterday where the guy was saying he was playing with the hacked Modern Warfare 2 lobbies on the PS3, I recall hearing somewhere that the Infinity Ward guys were saying that that is a big problem and the lobbies have been hacked, and I guess that's for Modern Warfare 1, 2, but I believe they were also saying that the Black Ops lobby or system uses some sort of server-side protection, so it is not capable of being hacked in the same manner. And same with World of War. So I don't know if that's true, so you can take it with a grain of salt, but I believe that's what I read online. So that's it. Have a good day.
Now, Will, you sort of looked up this for us. What did you find?
Yeah. So the issue is that older Call of Duty games, so Call of Duty 4 and Modern Warfare 2 in particular, are prone to an exploit on the PlayStation Network platform itself. So it's not in the game, it's actually in the platform. And Infinity Ward is basically saying there's nothing they can do about that. It's up to Sony to fix it. But newer games like Call of Duty Black Ops have got a kind of fix built in, so you shouldn't see any hacking in the lobby rooms in newer Call of Duty games and going forward as well.
English John from England wrote in to the show and suggested that PlayStation Network should just ban any hacked PS3 from using the PlayStation Network the way Xbox bans hacked Xboxes from using the Xbox Live Network.
Seems like a really sensible suggestion. I don't know why they don't do that.
Is there any reason we shouldn't do that, Nate?
No, not really.
Well, then why don't they do that instead of going to?
Why don't they do that, Nate?
Instead of going to court and causing everyone to hate them because they're pursuing what are probably perfectly normal legal tactics, but they look horrible in print.
Yeah, I kind of hinted at that earlier. I guess that that's probably what they should do. No one who has a hacked Xbox or PlayStation is going to go down for it. The people that are getting pursued are the people who charge to do these, chipping services. So I don't see that as being a problem.
All right. Finally, our last email to tnt@twit.tv is sort of an ad because it's about one of our sponsors. Eric in Chicago says, listen to you guys daily, enjoy the show. Wanted to let you know that I recently found another use for MailRoute at mailroute.info that you don't advertise. I'm the network manager for a large school district in Chicago, and quite frequently we need to do mail blasts with grade reports, snow alerts, and general newsletters to 4,000 students and their parents. While we could do this in-house and maintain an SMTP server for these tasks, what happens is quite often our public IP would get blacklisted. We'd be identified as spammers, and we'd get denial of delivery. I know exactly what he's talking about because this happened to us at techtv.com when we were running our newsletters from inside our own servers. And so we ended up contracting with something. Eric says, Tom at MailRoute worked with us to tailor make a contract for our needs, and we used their less advertised outbound smart host services to handle all outbound messaging. Now students and parents happily get alerts and grades, and there's nothing for us to maintain in-house. Just wanted to give credit where credit is due, and I'm glad I listened to your show to have found out about them. Thanks, Eric. That's a nice story, and then takes care of the fact that MailRoute is also sponsoring the show, because you can go to Tom at MailRoute.info and find out more about outbound services as well. All right, thank you guys for joining us for Tech News Today. Will Harris, ChannelFlip.com. Tell folks what that is and where else they can find you on the net.
It's a great little video network where you can watch some cool, funny comedy Brit humor content. So please go and check it out, channelflip.com, and follow me on Twitter at Will Harris.
A pleasure, as always, to have you on the show. And likewise to you, Nate Langson, let folks know about Wired UK and where they can find you on the net.
Well, you can find me at Wired UK, wired.co.uk, which is the site that I edit. And also, as well, on Twitter, I am at Nate Langson, NateLanxon.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. I feel like I'm being played off. And I want to thank my agent and my mom.
Get out of here.
And Jason.
No, you can't talk anymore.
See you tomorrow, folks.